And now,
the definition.
Oh, hey, space officers. How can we help you? Well, we're a little puzzled over one of your countries, Finland.
What about it?
It appears to have been destroyed.
What? Oh, my God, not Finland!
Oh, no! No, not Finland!
Hey, guys, Finland's dead!
Oh, no!
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 No, not the Finland!
All of Finland gone!
Yeah, somebody better break the news to Norway. They were really close.
None of you knew anything about Finland's destruction?
No, I mean, odds are they nuked themselves, you know, suicide.
We didn't say anything about nukes.
Or whatever they did, I'm saying.
Excuse me! Everyone, I have an announcement to make. I am giving back my Pinewood Derby trophy.
What?
Stan?
The truth is, I don't deserve this trophy. Because I cheated on my Pinewood Derby car. I used something not in the approved kit.
What?
You used something outside the kit?
Not in the approved kit?
He cheated on the Pinewood Derby?
This trophy isn't mine. And so I have to give it back. Because if I'm not honest now, then I'll have to keep this lie going forever. And it will just grow and grow.
Well, Stan, we're proud of you for coming clean. But it doesn't change the fact that you cheated. Go to your room, son.
Your son seems to have some pretty inspirational words. You sure you Earthlings have nothing else to tell us?
Hey, do we have anything else to tell the space cops?
Nope.
No changes. Tell them no.
No changes.
Yeah, no, we've told you everything, space officers.
All right, that's it then. Come on out, sir. It appears to be over.
Oh, shit, it's Baby Fork McGee's axe.
My real name is Kevin Zaxor. I am the ambassador to New Planet Testing.
What the hell are they talking about?
These are not space cops. There is no space jail, and space cash is only worth what you as a planet decided it was worth. I mean, how stupid is your species? Space jail? Baby Fark McGee's axe?
It's a trick?
Whenever a civilization discovers warp speed, we want to bring them into the Federation of Planets. But first we do the space cash test to see if that species is worthy of joining.
Needless to say, you all failed. People of Earth, since you did not return the space cache, your species and your planet is hereby forever blocked off and barred from the rest of the universe. Goodbye.
No, hey, wait, no! Well, that sucks.
Right now, the only person I see going on television and getting very specific about proposals that we like, proposals that we're going to need, inevitably. Obviously, we see Sanders doing that. We see AOC saying some of that. But it's, I can't even say his name. Let's play this clip. Mark Cuban, ladies and gentlemen. Mark
and potentially
Cuban. Go ahead.
Many more within the space of a month. I would have said you're crazy. There's just no way that's going to happen. And so dogma's got to go out the window. And so, you know, a federal jobs program, I would have been against that. Federal minimum wage, I would have been against that. There's just so many things that I think we need to do now. And, you know, and that's what entrepreneurs do. That's what,
pause,
you know, leaders
do. Pause it for 1 second. Right before that, he said he used to read Ayn Rand all the time. Started from there.
Yeah, I read Ayn Rand. I was, you know, Howard Roark. You know, I was libertarian. I was, you know, I thought government had a role, but smaller government was always better than bigger government. And that all changed. You know, if you were to ask me 4 months ago whether I thought we could lose 26 million jobs and potentially many more within the space of a month, I would have said, you're crazy. There's just no way that's going to happen. And so dogma's got to go out the window. And so, you know, a federal jobs program, I would have been against that. And federal minimum wage, I would have been against that. There's just so many things that I think we need to do now. And, you know, and that's what entrepreneurs do. That's what, you know, leaders do. When you face the circumstances you have and you deal with it. Effectively, all these trillion-dollar investments are a put for, and but this put has got to be not for the wealthy and not for big business, but for working people, because unless we lift up from the bottom, we're not going to have any consumer demand. And it doesn't matter how much liquidity is in the system, the risk hasn't left the system.
So, Mark, based on what you just said, this question will annoy Dagny Taggart and John Gold. But
pause for Ayn Rand reference. Pause it for 1 second. Why? I love to hear these guys talk about how much they now think that Ayn Rand is an idiot. But listen to what he's saying. Now, I'm not terribly thrilled about the idea that it's just all basically from getting consumer power. But the reality is, at the end of the day, like, the things that he does, if he puts in a federally mandated $15 minimum wage, not because it provides everyone a living wage, but because it's going to drive consumer purchasing power, fine. If he puts in a federal jobs program, great. He's talking about making literally structural change. Like, it's been a long time since the federal government did this. You know what people don't realize? You drive around, particularly in New England, but I imagine this is across the country. You see those signs that say, this is a landmark. This house was built in 1803, and this is where the Battle of Bunker Hill happened. These are all WPA projects from the last Depression. They hired historians. They hired artists. They hired architects. They hired they put everybody to work in some fashion, doing what they do best to make the country just broadly better, and simultaneously gave people an ability to live a better life. Here he goes on to talk about, I think we're going to catch him talking about the UBI here and why that's not sufficient in this instance.
Why not, after we get past, as we slowly start to bring up, why not, based on what you just said about demand, why not have the government, there are 200 million adults in the United States, send every adult $1,000 a month. I think, forgive me because I get zeroed out. That would be roughly, we're talking about $200 billion a month. Wouldn't that be a more effective way to deal with what we're dealing with as opposed to these programs?
Absolutely not. Look, and I know the UBIers are like Bitcoiners. They're going to come and attack when I tell you what I'm about to tell you. But first, I'm not against UBI for a partner who stays home to watch children, right? That makes sense because that's a job and that has value. But I'm going to quote JFK, or paraphrase JFK, ask not what your country can do for you, but what you can do for your country, because we need people to contribute. And while UBI is great for individuals and gives them a lot of creative control and personal control over their life, and that's great, right now we need people to contribute to the economy. And if that means a federally guaranteed job where you're working as a crossing guard managed by the folks at AmeriCorps or the people in the Peace Corps or whatever organization, then I'm fine with that. If it's a federally created job for testing and tracing, that is going to contribute to the economy, because we need people to do those jobs. Otherwise, we fall behind. So maybe in another world, UBI is a great solution. But where we are today, other than for partners staying home with kids, I'm not a fan.
It's interesting. I mean, I think that's an interesting argument. I would like a partial UBI, and then I would like a federal jobs program. Because the reason why I like the federal jobs program is that UBI is just easy for them to end. Federal jobs program, you're creating an infrastructure, a bureaucracy. You're getting value that is coming to, it makes the country better. And you're putting people, you're using, and I would expand it from where he's talking about. I would hire people to do what they do, meet them where they are, create work based upon what we have in terms of capacity as represented in the skills that the American public has at this point.
Okay, but what do you do in a situation like this one where a lot of people can't go to work and a lot of jobs can't be performed?
I think there's a whole host of jobs that can. I mean, to the extent that people can't, I think then you send them money, obviously. But I think there's a lot more that we can do. You know, on Wednesday I'm going to run the interview I did with the epidemiologist Michael Osterholm, and he's talking about, like, look, we can't stay in like this for 18 months, hoping, you know, and waiting for a vaccine. We need to get creative in the way that we get out in the world. And so that may mean, like, you know, shifts that people can go to, or, you know, we need to be able, you know, he doesn't have all the answers, but we need to start to figure that out. I'm sure, like, look, if I'm a historian, if I'm an engineer, if I'm whatever it is in terms of creating all this stuff, I can do a lot of that from a distance. There's a lot that we can't do from a distance. And obviously those, you got to provide money for those folks. But there's a whole host of stuff that we can do, you know, with, particularly if you're talking about a federal jobs guarantee, theoretically, you would have people trained.
Class war, class war, class war.
Now, Jim, show this gentleman how you can dance and sing.
My attitude towards the Western powers, if you want to say there's no rules, fine. Don't go crying for your mummy when that comes.
America today finds herself in a unique situation. She's the only country in history in a position to become involved in a bloodless revolution.
If America does not respond creatively to the challenge to banish racism, some future historian will have to say that a great civilization died because it lacked the soul and commitment to make justice a reality for all men.
When a system doesn't work for the majority of the people, you gotta change the system.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. It's your brother, Brian Mayadis. Welcome to this Class War Battle for a Podcast episode. So, I actually, I recorded this, I think back in April. But, though I liked what I was saying, I felt like I didn't do a good enough job communicating the point. So I want to go back, and I've been trying to get myself into a position where I would just go and re-record the whole thing. Obviously here I am with it. When it comes to COVID-19, I recognized very early that what COVID-19 is communicating, and this obviously is going to be part of a much larger COVID-19 kind of addendum series, which, you know, you'll see very quickly if you were to look, that there are multiple multiple parts to this episode. But I realized very early that what COVID-19 was basically telling the world is that this system, which has been utilized to really destroy the planet, to keep humanity from growing and maturing into what one might call enlightened human beings, that this system, which really has been built around the maintenance of a small group of people at the expense of the rest. Really, it is about the 99% and the 1%. The system, which has been so destructive to the natural environment. Remember what I was telling you in late 2019 when looking at Europeans' impact on nature. It is startling what humanity was unable to accomplish after tens of thousands of years, and what I mean by unable to accomplish, they shouldn't have accomplished it, which was the complete poisoning of and destruction of the natural environment, the natural landscape on this planet. Europeans have succeeded in doing that. Drastically doing that in 500 years. This system, which is built on death, it is built on grinding people to a pulp. It is built on this hierarchical structure, which is fundamentally exploitative. What COVID-19 is saying is it's over, it's done. This is a line in the sand from Mother Nature. And I recognized this early on. For the last 40 years, the economic reality in this country has focused itself around business cycles. The easiest way for me to explain, and actually I should say consumer cycles. The easiest way for me to explain what I mean by consumer cycles, not business cycles, because business cycles are a little bit more elongated. But the consumer cycles, just think of your major holidays. It's a little bit more complex than that, but the major holidays, this is where many companies made a lot of their money. Not all of it, but a lot of it. This is where their forecasts were proven correct. We became a society, particularly here in the United States, we became a society so reliant on the consumer cycle that the sacredness of anything having to do with a holiday was lost. The greatest example of this is Walmart. There was once upon a time, I'm talking now back in the early to mid 1990s, when Walmart would not put out Halloween stuff until really the beginning of October, because that was what was typical in our culture. The small communities which still had power would not enable people to put up Halloween stuff till October. Most of your main street wouldn't start selling Halloween stuff until October. So September was kind of the celebration of the oncoming of fall and harvest and things like that. Well, you and I both know now that as soon as schooling is taken care of, so as soon as back to school is done, which is usually right after Labor Day, we know that Walmart puts out Halloween stuff in September. They're not the only store to do it. There's other stores that do it too. But that's because the consumer cycle, which was constricted in, or not constricted, but restricted back in the 1990s, has become everything now. And it, you know, this started happening at the beginning of the 2000s, if memory serves me correctly. The consumer cycle became more important than anything. And so that consumer cycle was the fuel that pushed along our economy. Well, ladies and gentlemen, the consumer cycle is broken. The consumer cycle is broken. It's been broken. COVID-19 broke the consumer cycle. That's what it did. Moreover, it's even broken the business cycle.
by forcing businesses to invest in certain things and areas where they didn't think they would have to invest in. Now, some of that just moves money around. But some of it is new. So you already see this kind of with Hollywood, where Hollywood has typically 1 to 2, sometimes 3 years worth of movies kind of already somewhat scheduled. They know when they want movies to come out. And because they know when they want those movies to come out, they have the machinery put in place to promote them, to get them out to distributors, things like that. Well, COVID-19 has said, distribute all you want, but you're not really going to the movies, are you? No, you're not. That business cycle, that 3 to 5 year business cycle, has been broken. It's been broken. So the economic cycles which this neoliberal society has been fed on, particularly these corporations which profit from these cycles, they've been broken. And what comes next is a question that we not only have to ask now, but we have to be certain about. We have to really say, what do we want our society to be like and why? Now, I was disappointed and dismayed by the fact that the government, I wasn't surprised by it, but by the fact that the government decided to give unto the wealthy all this money which they really didn't need and did little to solve the problems of the average person. Well, in thinking about what is needed, not only in this country but around the world, because this is changing the entire global economic reality. One of the greatest things that's going to come out of this is the idea that countries need to take care of not only each other, but they need to take care of their people. For a long time, far too long, the economy was built around taking care of the wealthy. No, it's now obviously, you would know this if you've been paying attention for the last couple of months. There are people, regular, everyday people, hundreds of thousands, millions of people in each country saying, wait a minute. We're tired of this globalist nonsense. Get manufacturing. Get the necessary companies that we need to take care of our people home. So we can take care of our communities and ourselves. Not because we hate everybody else. But because, just like with individuals, ladies and gentlemen, if you take care of yourself first, if you make sure that you're healthy, not at the expense of everybody else, but because you love everybody else, if you take care of yourself first, it's going to put you in the position to care for and help other people. This is what people are starting to recognize. Well, here's the problem. Here's the problem. I was thinking about this new reality that's possible. And the one thing that I realized is the reason why we haven't been able to solve the issues created by capitalism is not only just because, you know, capitalism, but because the idea of economy is still built on the same principles that ran feudalism. That the wealthy are there because God loves them, and they're greater, and God gave them greater gifts, and So they should run everything. And the biggest thing, which is that we have the necessary tools now to make poverty disappear. We have the knowledge to know how to make poverty completely irrelevant now. But that knowledge is shunned aside because we have a small group of people at the top of each society that are absolutely dedicated to competition with each other and not caring for the societies which they are the head of. The truth of the matter is, COVID-19 has called their competition, their competitive natures, into question. It has called their competitive natures into question. Not only has it called their competitive natures into question, what it has revealed is that through their competitive natures, which is feeding the entire economic system, they're creating not only they're creating unstable circumstances all throughout the world. Not only are they creating unstable circumstances, but they are creating, and they have created, a system which enables them to be as competitive as they want with each other, and they're really not as competitive as people think, but it enables them to be very competitive at the expense of the life and blood and treasures of other people. Mother Nature is now calling that into question. I did not see, when I first recorded this in the beginning of April, I didn't see that we would have, by this time, which is September, we would have the richest Americans grow their wealth by over $500 billion in just 4 months. I didn't foresee that. I didn't. I did know that they were going to use the pandemic to reshape the economic reality as stores and businesses and stuff closed, the small businesses closed throughout the country. I knew they would take advantage of it. But I didn't realize how absolutely ruthless and predatory they would be with it or about it. Well, what then are we being called to do? Because this reality of capitalism is over. It's done. Now, back 10 years ago, a little bit over 10 years ago, libertarians, particularly those who consider themselves economic libertarians, they used to always tout the fact that money isn't real. It's fiat currency. Meaning it doesn't get its worth from anything but what we give it. Which is one of the reasons why I played the clip from South Park at the beginning of this wonderful podcast episode. Which, can I just say, I got to point out, because they're very much, South Park is very much a libertarian cartoon. It's kind of ironic that they made the individual actions of these two have such consequence within Earth, when most libertarians are all about, you know, hyper-individualism. It's kind of funny. But anyway, money is fiat currency. But it has the ability of draining significant meaning and relevance and liveliness from areas in society, because that's the power we give to it. Well, we need to think of how, we need to rethink how we use money now. We need to rethink how we use money. Maybe it is time to give everybody in the United States a basic income for the next 4 or 5 years. $2,000 a month. Oh, well, where will we get it from? That's funny. You didn't think about that when you gave $29 trillion to the big banks to prop them up after 2008. Nobody thought about that because it was given to the big banks. But and this isn't just the United States. This is across Europe and in the world. Nobody thought about it. Well, it's time to think like that for the rest of the populace. Why I'm redoing this also is because the idea of a basic income, which is not just the only thing that I want to talk about. Obviously, the name of the episode is Commonwealth Allowance. I'll get into that in a moment. These are things that we really need to take seriously now. The idea of a basic income, which, you know, some people are like, oh, $1,000. I laugh at that. I've been in a position where I've made, you know, between $12,000 and $18,000 because of how minimum wage works in a year. And, you know, $12,000 is nothing in a year. Nothing. Absolutely nothing. $2,000 a month is still nothing, but it's better. What $2,000 a month will do is it will allow you to get all of your basic, well, depending on where you live. But where I live right now, $2,000 a month would allow a person to get all of their basic needs met. That's a person. Obviously, if you're a couple, you'd have $4,000. If you have a couple of kids, $4,000 may not get you there. But it's closer than you were. Then if you're working, which is why I'm for a universal basic income, if you're working, you add, all right, for example, a relatively decent job in the area that I work is paying $17 an hour. So at the end of a week, which again depends on where you live, but at the end of the week, you're talking about $680. Which is roughly $36,000 a year. It's actually $35,000, $36,000. So a little bit over $35,000 a year. You add an additional $24,000 onto that. Life gets better. Significantly better. Okay? Life gets better. Now, if you are making $24,000 like a lot of other people are, man, I couldn't tell you when I was making $24,000 an hour just a few years ago, and I'm not talking like 12 or 13 or 15, no, I'm talking about 5, 6 years ago I was making $24,000 a year. If somebody was sending me $2,000 a month on top of what I was going to work and making, the difference that that would have made would have been astronomical. Would have been absolutely astronomical. And you yourself know, if you're listening, if you think about it, what would $24,000, what would $2,000 a month do for you? Here's the funny thing is, while we're thinking about what it'll do for each of us, think about what it'll do for your community. Think about what it would do for your community. If you had, if, you know, let's say you have 1,000 people in your community. So each month, you're getting $2 million pumped into your community. Now, if you combine that with a bi-regional campaign to encourage people to buy regionally, you can take that $2 million and circulate it among your community for that entire month, and just, you could revitalize so much of your community by doing that. Just with the $2 million that you'd be pumping into your community. And if you pass laws that tells Walmart and all these big box stores that they got to keep their money in your community, in the region, up to, let's say, 6 to 8 months before they can take it out. And if they don't like that, they can get out. That changes the dynamic of your community. Moreover, if you encourage people to become entrepreneurs with a bent towards creating cooperatives, with a bent towards creating companies that are going to remain not only in the community, but are going to be good stewards of the community, that $2,000 will fundamentally impact not only the current generation, but the next generation positively. But you and I think most of you listening might already know this. And if you don't, oh man, there you go. But, and I'll tell you why it's going to be difficult to pass a UBI. Wealthy people are afraid of UBI. Not because they're afraid that you're going to get attached to the government. No. Uh-uh. They're afraid of UBI because of the potential within it. Let's say you pass a law that says for the next 5 years, you're going to give every American person over the age of 18 or emancipated person who is no longer living at home, can prove that, $2,000 every single month. And let's say, as a person who's 35 years old, you have $40,000 worth of hospital debt. Now, you pass a law with the UBI that says banks and stuff can't touch it. They can't touch it. But you decide, okay, over the next 2 years, I'm going to pay off my medical bills. Now, I know. I understand debt forgiveness and stuff. Let's focus on one thing at a time. So you do. You negotiate, because you can negotiate half the time with this stuff, guys. Don't let them fool you. You negotiate with them to say, look, if I can pay you, you know, let's say $1,000 a month, knock off $10,000 of the $40,000, and I'll get you guys paid off by the end of, or the middle of, you know, 2 years from now. And let's say they say that's fine. So you get everything paid off. Boom. Get it all paid off. Use some of your taxes. Get it all paid off. Now you have an additional $1,000. Now, let's say you live in a pretty nice-sized community of about 20,000 people. And some of your neighbors have been talking, along with you, about buying up with some of their money, buying up an old manufacturing facility that used to manufacture, let's say, machine equipment. And let's say you guys want to buy that up. There's 100 of you, and you're thinking maybe you could buy it up, turn it into a cooperative, and start producing wind turbines, or even more, maybe somebody has a new way of producing electricity that you want to put onto the market. So you guys get together and you start going around the community to get everybody together, and, you know, hey, if you put in $5,000, you know, you'll be equal partner in this wonderful company, and it'll stay here. And you get a couple hundred people to do that, and you buy up the place, you open it up, and it takes a couple years, but it becomes a pretty good success. Now, ladies and gentlemen, imagine that model being reproduced all across the country. Imagine it. But not only imagine it as a manufacturer, you know, as just people start manufacturing, imagine people starting grocery stores that are community-owned cooperatives. How about electric companies that are community-owned cooperatives? How about cellular service companies that are community-owned and cooperative, all from this money? That's why the wealthy are really afraid of it, ladies and gentlemen. Because you might get it into your mind that you could take that money and build a better economic society than they've built. And there's only so much debt that they could weigh you down with. Once you get that debt ridded from yourself, you're going to get to work on doing two things. One, putting money away. And then two, you're going to start building your community back up. You're going to start doing it. And they don't want it. And they don't want it because they want control. They learned from the 60s. You don't weigh the population down with debt. You don't crush them with a burden that they can't get from under. And the people will act beneficially to themselves. That's why they're afraid of UBI. That's why they're afraid of UBI. Because you will start an economic revolution that they can't control. That would put the power back into your hands, not theirs. Now, obviously, this is a UBI. People who ask where would it come from, I say to them, right now, the wealthy, the corporations particularly, but the wealthy also, are paying like less than 10%. I mean, they are paying less than 10% of what they should be paying in taxes. That's where it could come from. Or we could just come to the conclusion, finally, that money isn't real. And that we can print as much of it as we need. But that would take a refiguring of money and how it relates to the world. Again, why I played that clip at the beginning. Now, the reason I called this episode, I put the words Commonwealth Allowance in it, is because I think that's where we actually need to head towards. Because the problems of each society are so large that the only way that we are going to solve them is we have to completely reconfigure the global power arrangement. And that's really the only way that it's going to happen. This planet needs to be saved, and it needs to be saved from us, or else the planet's going to get rid of us. And to act like the old power dynamics, which have been ruling this world for 500 years, I don't care how many people have changed the names, the faces, it's the same power dynamic that was put in place 500 years ago to ensure that all of the world's resources, I hate that name, natural elements, that all of the world's natural elements benefited Europe or Eurasia first. That was the structure that was put in place 500 years ago, and that's how it's worked since. Well, that day has ended. That day has ended. The power dynamic which fueled that is being challenged every day. That is white supremacy. That is the principle which enabled that dynamic to rule. That day is done. Because white supremacy is being challenged and will continue to be challenged. And yes, will be dismantled. Dr. King used to tell America, the arc of the moral universe is long, but it bends towards justice. People think that justice is just a place of destination, and then you go past it. And then it's back into injustice. No, ladies and gentlemen, it moves into an arc of justice. And that arc is long. It is long. It goes for 50, 60, 70, 80, 100 years. until things are rerouted and recorrected, until the principles of honor and dignity are restored. If that don't happen, well, the Native Americans have already told us what's going to happen. So the power dynamic, that power principle of white supremacy will be dismantled. It's prophesized. The question is, what is going to be the cost of the funeral? And that's what white people need to kind of get through their minds. What kind of folks on the cosmic stage do you want to be remembered as? What kind of folks do you want to be remembered as? Because if you don't choose differently, cosmically, there is going to be an imprintation on this galaxy that's written about white folks, and it ain't going to be good. So when they have a chance to be rebirthed, there will be a look at what they accomplished and what they didn't, and there will be a question on whether or not you want to rebirth that or not. They were destroyed for a reason, it would be said. The Great Mother was sympathetic and compassionate, but she destroyed them, and she destroyed them because they needed to be destroyed. They were destroying her. So that's the biggest question that you got to face right now. COVID-19 has presented you with that choice. You will bring the planet close to destruction before you realize your folly. We are here. We are now. We are circling around World War III. We need to get away from it. The dynamic, though, of Commonwealth is really, I think, where we need to head now. White supremacy, done. Indigenous people throughout the world, including in Africa, talked about a principle which the Europeans call Commonwealth. This non-competitive agreement and alignment of the world. Europe is going to have to stop being the administrator of justice because Lord knows they've done a horrible job of it over the last 500 years. They got to stop doing that. They need to stop being the center of economic reality because Lord knows they're not doing things fairly for the rest of the globe. And that's COVID-19 is pulling that and making that bear. So with Commonwealth at the center principle of a resurrected world, what is needed is a certain amount of money which is given out to each country for each of its citizens. And that Commonwealth allowance, which is what I call it, will encourage the country through a major international agreement. It will encourage the country, or each country, to build better hospitals, build better schools, fix up their communities, engage in forest restoration projects, intense forest restoration projects, the dismantling of old buildings and structures, the building of recycling infrastructure, which is something that, you know, should have been done for the last 100 years. I mean, if you're looking for a sign that capitalism is all about destruction, look no further than the fact that capitalists have never been interested in funding recycling projects. They can put billions of dollars into manipulating societies, but they do not want to put billions of dollars into recycling. It's a joke. I would think that a decent Commonwealth allowance for each citizen would fall between $30,000 and $50,000 a year. Oh, where are you going to get the money from? Money is fake. All you're doing is just putting on paper an agreement. That's what money is. $30,000 to $50,000 per person for each country. Well, what if the countries tell a lie? Well, yes, that is absolutely a problem if, you know, you're only looking at the fact that Europeans tend to lie a lot. Other countries also tend to lie a lot because they're following the people who are setting the trends. This is why I asked the question, how do white people want to be remembered? It's time to build some trust and honor again around the globe, guys. Come on. With $30,000 to $50,000 per person, though, governments literally will have the power to build up their society to cure the problems, the ills that have been afflicting their societies. They'll be able to solve and repair old buildings, transit lines, infrastructure of all kinds. You'd be able to actually ensure that all people throughout the country has great water. Did you know that there is a process for purifying water? You have to obviously build the plant to do it, which would result in vitamin-infused water going to every house. Some of the best water quality that you can obtain comes not from, you know, poorer communities, but in these wealthier communities where they have better plants. But the plants cost a lot of money to build. $30,000 to $50,000 per person. Where will you get the money from? Where'd they get the money from in the first place? They made it out of thin air. When they were creating, you know, tens of trillions, hundreds of trillions of CDOs. Or, I'm sorry, not CDOs, CDSs. Credit default swaps. Nobody asked where were they getting the money from. It just was assumed to be there. They created hundreds of trillions of dollars of the stuff. This is going to add real value. This would add real value to the lives of the people on the planet. I mean, think about it. Think about what a country could do with that kind of money. Poverty would be a thing of the past. If you have 20 million people in your country and you're getting $50,000 per head, that is an additional $1 trillion every single year. That's an additional $1 trillion for a country with 20 million people. That's an additional $1 trillion every single year. Now, obviously, because we're all worried about corruption and the European system encourages corruption despite what they say, there would have to be checks to ensure that, you know, the money is really getting to where it needs to get to. But still, we can't let the fear of corruption stop us from changing the direction, the death spiral of this planet. I mean, I was putting my mind together on this, you know. Now, it would be wise, you know, countries getting the $50,000 per head, to take the UBI out of the out of that $50,000, the $2,000 a month, which would make sense, which would then leave only $36,000 for the country to use. But still, in a country the size of the United States, you'd be talking about each year receiving around between $16 and $17 trillion for Commonwealth allowance sake. I mean, you'd be able to, in the United States, you'd be able to rebuild manufacturing, you'd be able to rebuild infrastructure, put money into desalinization plants, put money into demonopolizing utilities so they could be placed in communities again. You can put high-speed railway and high-speed internet throughout the country. Reforestation efforts could go ahead. Building massive, massive public work projects that actually add value to society. I mean, this would change the trajectory of the world overnight. And it is what must be done. It is what must be done. And for those who say, well, wait a minute, what if the cost of living in a place is lower than the United States, which would be true for a lot of places? My answer to you is, so what? First and foremost, what you'd find is that would help the cost of living stabilize, and it would help people raise themselves out of poverty. But secondly, and by the way, those who are like, what about the fight that, you know, poverty gives you? Man, that's garbage. But secondly, those people, most of them, will take the money and put in banks and just pile it up there. Well, how long would this project last? Well, how about one generation? How about 25 to 30 years? See what actually happens. Oh, people are going to get lazy, will they? Will they? And, you know, along with the Commonwealth allowance, we need a Commonwealth agenda. And part of that Commonwealth agenda is to start doing away with the fact that employment needs to occur for 40 hours a week. That's garbage. That's garbage. Most of the work that needs to get done, and it's being proven by COVID-19, can be done in less than 20 hours a week. The other stuff, we're starting to have computers that can do all of that. We have a lot of, quote, surplus labor, which we could be putting to work beautifying our wonderful society. 20 hours a week of employment, and in fact less, is where we should be at. And people should be able to live comfortably. We should have a lot of time to actually work through the real problems of the world now, and it's time that we turn our attention to doing that, instead of trying to subsist like we're still living back in the darn stone ages, back in the dang ice. We're not in the ice anymore. And for many of us, we were never in the ice. You don't have to work yourself into bitterness and old age and death to get ahead. Which, what does get ahead even mean? One of the biggest problems that I have with a lot of capitalists is they claim to be Christian and they're like, I'm pro-life. Until the person comes out the uterus, and I don't give a darn about it. It's time to change the trajectory of this planet, because the planet's warning us that if we don't change the trajectory of the planet's going to change its trajectory on how it deals with us. So, questions, comments, concerns, let me know. I am your brother, Vladimir Deese. I'll talk to you on the next one. There's a shadow.
of the men who sent the gun to the wars that are fought in places where their business interest runs. On the radio, talk shows, and the TV, you hear one thing again and again: how the USA stands for freedom, and we come to the aid of a friend. But who are the ones that we call our friends? These governments killing their own, or the people who find they can't take anymore, and they pick up a gun or a brick or a stone.